Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Raising the Vibration with Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio.
It's Raising the Vibration right here on LA Talk Radio, and I am your host, Sheena Metal. We're at raisingthevibrationradio.com. We're at latalkradio.com. I'm at sheenametal.com. And of course, the movement that inspired the radio show. I am also the founder of a movement of peace, love, kindness, and unity called I Am Raising the Vibration of the Nation and the World. And we're at iamraisingthevibration.com and also at our nonprofit hub, which is raisingthevibration.org. Every week on the show, I feature somebody who I've known from my life, from my radio life, from one of the many things that I do, who really understands the idea of giving back, of being in service, of being respectful to the universe, to those around us, to the world. And this man is certainly no exception. But back before, I knew a lot of people who were talking about integrating their spiritual lives into the other things that they did. My dear friend Dustin Perry, who's here with us today, fresh off of being on Ghost Hunters and being a part of the paranormal community, which he still is, was talking about spirituality on Twitter. And I couldn't wait to have him on the show from the get-go. And he's finally here. Welcome, my friend. Honestly, I have so much love and respect for you and everything that you do as a citizen of the universe. And I'm so excited to have you here with me.
You're so very, very kind, and I truly appreciate it. It's a pleasure to be here with you tonight, and it's been great to have known you over the years and seen you here and there, and thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely. The last time I saw you, we were in Kentucky, in Louisville.
That's right.
And it was so nice to see you face-to-face, and it's, I don't know if you know this, but that's where my mom is from, and I actually went there. I found my birth grandmother, who died when my mom was six. I found her grave online on ironically enough, findagrave.com. And I went with my mom's ashes to spread them there. And that's why I was there.
Wow. That's great. I've actually used that website a couple of times for various different things, research and personal and everything
else.
Right,
you totally can.
It's really useful.
So back in the days, like I was saying when I introduced you, when I was honestly too fearful of talking about my spiritual life on this show and in the various different things that I do in the entertainment world and other worlds, you were very bold about, and you even came here and did a show with me right after you had sort of, you know, moved that as sort of an alternative focus of your life. And you've always been so open about it. And I think you're so courageous, and I so admire that. Was there ever a minute where you thought, man, maybe I shouldn't, you know, be talking about this on Twitter?
I wasn't so much concerned about it. I mean, I definitely received my share of hate mail, but that just kind of only that only reinforced that I was doing something right. You know, a friend of mine, my buddy Mikey McLean out of Michigan, I remember having a conversation with him about it. It's so funny. I haven't thought about this in forever, but you mentioned it and it came right back to me. I remember talking to him about it, and he said, you know, you're not flying close enough to the enemy unless you're drawing fire. So just keep on doing what you're doing. And I was like, yeah, that's fantastic, man. You know, and so because I know I'm just putting out messages of kindness and love, and nothing I say is judgmental or anything. So I think sometimes the people that react in such a negative way are maybe the people that need to hear it the most. So I continue to do it. The only thing that ever struck me as odd is, you know, because I do the conventions and things quite a bit at the paranormal things, and someone had mentioned to me once, a manager for another group, and said to me, he's like, you know, maybe you shouldn't wear so many Christian t-shirts and things all the time, and, you know, it just doesn't seem to fit with what everybody else is doing. And I was like, well, what the heck do I want to fit with what everybody else is doing, you know? So, I mean, 9 times out of 10, I'm either wearing a Christian t-shirt or something with a unicorn on it or a cat. Like, I'm definitely not one of your skulls and demons kind of paranormal people.
Right. Yeah. And you know what? And I'm not really either. And you know, I grew up with a mom who loved the paranormal, with a mom who was in the closet about being a psychic medium until she was in her early 50s. I get my love of gargoyles from her. She made me half the gargoyles that I have. I mean, she was very much about being in touch with your dark side, but not about letting that darkness and that negativity be reflective of who you are. And I think sometimes when you understand that there is darkness and negativity out there, that's enough dark. You don't need to really put it on a T-shirt, too.
Yeah, no, exactly. And I'm all about fashion and stuff. You know, some of the stuff, like, I get it. If you're into, you know, the paranormal culture
sure.
or certain things, like, yeah, it looks, you know, I've got even some of my Christian shirts and stuff have skulls and stuff on it. It all depends, you know, but I think it's more of the attitude. I just don't support the gloom and doom attitude because I think it ends up being a lifestyle, you know, and ends up
yes.
being consuming. And I think that that's a problem that people don't think about until it's too late.
Yes. It's there. If I always say, if you're looking for negativity in the world, you'll find it. So why would you go looking
for it? Yeah, surprisingly enough, there's a lot to choose from.
Yeah. Why would you go looking for it? I mean, it's obviously going to be there if you're looking for it. You can't help but have negative things happen in your life, so why would you seek out more? But I think people, I don't know. I think that's a discussion that we could spend like 12 hours giving a symposium, Dustin. There are the fascination with the negative and the dark is a thing as old as humanity. So it's something
that I
don't see people changing anytime soon in regard to that. But coming from that community and coming from a community where there are a lot of paranormal investigators and there are a lot of folks that are psychics and mediums and there are a lot of folks that are occultists and have adopted different alternative types of spirituality, whether it's Eastern, whether it's metaphysical, whether it's you know, more occulty or pagan or Wicca, because sometimes they feel disenfranchised with the indoctrination of whatever religion they grew up in, is it hard to come into a community like that and be at a convention and say, like, hey, I'm a Christian? I mean, because I think Christians get, you know, there is a sort of a sometimes a negative slapback with saying that you're a Christian, which to me is, you know, I think a lot of people don't understand what the teachings of Christ actually are. They think a Christian, they associate that with people who've acted badly in the name of Christ.
Yeah, no, I would totally agree. Absolutely. I think that, I remember the movie Dogma that came out, and they said, you know, the amount of things that have been done in God's name that are just absolutely horrific. It's just, and it continues on, you know?
Yes.
And so, yeah, for sure, we get painted with a very broad stroke on that one, because negativity is what people tend to lean toward, and that's what they tend to remember. So, you know, you have a bad interaction with somebody of a certain faith, and then you find out somebody else is of it, and you assume they're all like that, you know?
Yes.
And it's not exclusive to Christianity, but for sure, you know, when it comes to judgment and stuff, I think we're probably top shelf. But I do my best to always move away from that. And as I say in pretty much every one of my lectures now, paranormal, motivational, even my Christmas ones, I always find a way to work it in that I truly believe that we need to remember that our race is human and our religion is love.
Yes.
Regardless of where you're from, regardless of the color of your skin, regardless of your orientation, what language you speak, which prophet you like, which deity you may or may not worship, we're all together in this life. And
absolutely.
We need to focus on that commonality.
But don't you think, and I've had people argue with me, you know, that are mostly folks that are ex-Christians. Now, I'm lucky that, although technically I grew up Presbyterian, I didn't grow up sort of in any religion. We didn't regularly go to church. And I always laugh that what I remember from my days as a Presbyterian was a minister would get up and say, okay, God and Jesus, and we have fantastic coffee cake. And then everybody would get like a herd of crazed animals go screaming towards the cookies and the cookies and coffee cake were actually really good because nobody's whiter than Presbyterians. So that I don't remember. I didn't grow up in a church that, you know, was very told me I couldn't be this or I couldn't be that or I couldn't do this. So I don't have a lot of that, you know, kind of anger. And my mother, although she didn't really come out with a lot of her metaphysical beliefs until I was in college, she was always sort of slowly but surely infusing that into her belief system, which was really being a teachings of Christ Christian. And I think if you look at the teachings of Christ as separated from what humans have done, some humans have done in Christ's name, you mean, to me, the whole New Testament, when people are arguing with me about why they left the church or why there's no God or why everything in the Bible is ridiculous, I always say, like, have you read the New Testament? Because to me, it's really just about connection, community, and love. And what could be wrong with those three words? It's about, you know, connecting to each other and to the higher power, connect to God, you know, spread community, grow a community of love, and love itself. And to me, those are all things that are very, very beautiful and much closer to a lot of my metaphysical beliefs than sometimes, you know, other people's sort of angry, whatever they are, beliefs.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that it people just, you know, take the time to look at the actual teachings of religions rather than what people that just profess that faith do. You know, even within the Bible, like, and, you know, just because that's my understanding. And I wasn't always a Christian. I was raised Roman Catholic. I graduated high school, a happy little atheist, and I followed my own little path. And I studied Taoism and Eastern philosophies, and I liked Buddhism. And then eventually I just kind of wanted to see, you know, where exactly I kind of fit in. And I found my way back, and I felt like Christianity was just kind of overall like an umbrella, you know. And I go to an Episcopalian church currently, and, you know, it's, I find it should be more about relationship and less about regulation. And I think that, yes, you know, when I was in high school and stuff, like they did a great job with the teachings, but I felt a lot of it was, don't do this, don't do that, don't do this, don't do that. And enough of that, you know, God is the invisible boogeyman. Like I need to be understood. I need to know that this human experience is not easy for us as spirits going through it, and that we're going to make mistakes and we're going to stumble and fall, but there's forgiveness and there's mercy, and it's part of our experience, you know, instead of thinking, oh, I screwed up, I'm never going to be any good, and then just kind of giving up. And that was a big thing for me. That's where I found a lot of understanding. And honestly, music is what brought me back to it the most. I started listening to K-Love Radio, and Toby Mac is one of my favorite Christian artists and really brought me back to it. And that's not all I listen to all the time. I mean, I listen to the Beatles and Elvis and 80s hair bands and 1940s jazz, but you know, that Christian music was a big part of me finding my understanding and finding relationship.
I think that's wonderful. And Soder, how do you define what kind of Christian you are? Because I mean, there are different people who identify with different things in Christianity.
I guess, I don't know. Is hippie a part of the classification?
Right. Well, that's kind of Christ, right?
I think so. I go to the Episcopalian church, and I don't have any problems with any of their teachings or anything. You know, I really like the fact that we have a woman who's our priest. We had a deacon for a while who was very open in as being a gay man, and everybody was welcomed, and everybody was just shown love and affection. There was nobody, you know, there was nobody that was kicked out. You know, everybody was welcome. I think this is what it's supposed to be. Like, why is it? This is so hard for people to understand. Like, I just don't get it. So, you know, I don't think any personal classification will ever get it, because it just doesn't really, none of them ever seem to fit perfectly. But I like going to the Episcopalian church and stuff. But I mean, I'm all about just forgiveness and love and just trying to move forward together and just showing kindness to people. I think that we lack kindness and understanding in such an incredible way, because everything is just self-focused, and self-focus is not a way to go forward, because the world is way too big for just one person.
Absolutely. You know, when I founded this movement the day after the election, which was, you know, technically the results were announced after midnight, so it was the next day. That was my mom's birthday, and she had passed about 6 months earlier. And I knew after she passed that I was going to do something to kind of carry on her spiritual and her humane work, but I had no idea what it was. And then after that day, as I was wondering, as the world was falling apart and friends were hating each other and people were unfriending each other, I sort of just got a download from the universe, that kind of beautiful celestial voice that you hear that says, this is where you're going next. And here it is. I mean, the name and it really focusing on the four things that my mom really felt were lacking in our modern society, which was, you know, the want for peace, the, you know, expelling as much love as you can, using kindness whenever possible, and our inability to think of ourselves as a unified human family. And that's why those became the cornerstones of the movement. It's interesting that you have already mentioned love and kindness, and we've only been into this about 15 minutes, because that's two of my words right there. I think that people have a really hard time. Sometimes people feel like in some way they're letting their guard down, or they're some way have to compromise themselves in order to always lead with love and to always come and to always live in love. But once you surrender into that place of always leading with love and living in love, I think you find that you actually feel less fearful and more empowered for the surrender than you did before when you were so scared to surrender. Do you feel that way too?
Yeah, totally. And it is a tough step for sure. You know, I can totally get it because our world has kind of customized this and made us operate out of fear. And so we look at people that we see doing kind things and loving things. And even if we think it's something that we might want to try, we've been kind of programmed to think of those people as weak and those people as foolish. And I think that's a big problem. And it's a huge misconception because it takes great bravery and strength to be kind and loving in a world that has become kind of darkened and hardened. And I do this lecture called the Great Emoji Lecture. And I'm doing it actually at a little school over here in Massachusetts in like 2 days. But I travel around doing all my different lectures. And my Great Emoji Lecture was talk about our default setting. And our default setting is happy. And part of that happiness comes out of kindness and out of love. And we, as we grow, get pushed away from that. And I think it's time for us to reset and get back to what it's really all about and not worry about what other people think and to do what we know inside is the right thing to do. And even if it leaves us vulnerable, I think the more you do it, the easier it gets. And it doesn't mean you're not going to get hurt because, trust me, it still happens. As people that try to take advantage and everything else. But you do the best you can. You're not going to be perfect, and there's people are going to mistreat you, and the key is just not to let them do it twice. You know, it's okay, and you forgive them. They don't know any better, but then just move forward. You know, just leave that welcome mat out for kindness and love and leave the light on for them, but don't allow yourself to be abused or taken advantage of.
I couldn't agree more with you, and I'm exactly the same way. I think that if we come from a place where we're no longer leading with love, and if we come from a place where you know, we're always assuming the worst is going to happen and when we don't even know yet, like, you know, like approaching everything with a glass half empty, you know, ideology, then all we're doing is we're just changing ourselves. We're turning ourselves into somebody that we don't want to be. And we're doing it under the guise of protection. And like you said, you have to learn to protect yourself. This is a world full of all different kinds of people. It takes all kinds. You have to develop filters and you have to develop, you know, ways to protect yourself from people who may get, you know, crawl under your fence. And then it turns out they're not positive and you have to find a way to shoo them back out and not allow yourself to be irreparably damaged by it. But if we come to a place where we're never open, you know, sort of approaching everything from this kind of childlike wonderment, all it does is hardens and changes us. It doesn't change them because people are going to be who they're going to be. It just changes us. And I don't like myself when I'm not somebody who approaches everybody new with an optimistic openness, like they're going to be wonderful. I mean, sometimes when they turn out not to be, there's sort of a wah, 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 and but still, I like that better than if I sort of approached everyone with side eye, like, you're probably going to turn out to be a jerk, aren't you? Because it's not true. Yeah. Not everybody's going to turn out to be like that. And you have to...
Yeah.
You have to be the
people
person
will
that
show you their colors. People will show you who they are, but you have to at least give them the benefit of a doubt.
Yes. Yes. And you have to be the person every day that you want to be. You have to be the person that makes you comfortable, and you can't become something that you're not. And I know from how much I know what I know about you, Dustin, and I'm sure you know about me, that we are just not people that from the get-go approach everything in a negative way or in a this is not going to turn out to be great way. I would be so unhappy if I turned into that person.
No, totally agree. I just said sometimes I look at things and I'm like, well, it seems a little bit foolhardy, but dang it, I'm going to believe it's going to work out. And
I'd
be surprised, you know, 9 times out of 10, it still does. I'm like, oh, wow, that was amazing. But you get comfortable with it.
And sometimes it really does. Yeah.
Yeah.
Was it hard for you when you first started talking about your spirituality? Because, you know, there's always sort of been a rift in the paranormal community, right? Between the spiritual folks and the technical folks. And sometimes you're considered less than if you have a lot of psychic mediums in your group, or if your paranormal investigators admit to being empathic or intuitive, or if you're judging your experience with the spirit world based on anything but what the cameras and tape recorders and meters are picking up, right?
Yeah, there's definitely some kind of two paths there, and a lot of times they don't entwine, but they really should. You know, the first book I ever did, which I wrote with Guy Fitzgerald, was The Complete Approach. The whole idea was combining metaphysical understandings with scientific theory. And, you know, people throw around science very, like, loosely, too, with the paranormal. It's like, relax. Like, none of us wearing lab coats and conducting, like, incredible experiments here. It's very difficult to have, you know, the same set of circumstances and scenarios if you're running a test here. It's easy to have variables because there's so much that we can't control. But to actually have, you know, so many things that are your control subject and stuff, it's not easy. But I just think that, you know, being scientific means more than just using, you know, a gadget that lights up. It's like, oh, this lights up to red. Great. What the hell are you measuring? I don't know. If it's a ghost, it lights it up to red. That's great. I think that if they're going to use equipment, that's wonderful. For me personally, at this stage of my research with the spirit world and just my own understandings, I don't need to document anything to prove anything to myself, and I never really cared to prove anything to anybody else anyway. I think spirituality is a personal path. If you want to talk to me about it, I'll talk to you about it. If you ask me a question, I'll answer your question. But I'm not going to try to, you know, dunk you and baptize you and tell you this is the way it's going to be. But if you want to investigate and you need to, you know, research something for a homeowner or for a business, or if it's for a television show, you have to show something quantifiable. You have to show some type of measurement, some type of recording or whatever. But I think it's important to not shut out the metaphysical side and the spiritual side. Right?
Yes.
To do so is foolhardy, because we're talking about the spirit world. So why the heck would you not get spiritual about it? You know, and I think there's room for both. For me, I would always go where I was guided, and I would set up the equipment to document what's going on, but I wouldn't sit there and stare at the equipment. I want to look around and be a part of the moment. Just like in this life, so many of us are so busy documenting everything, we don't actually live it. You go to a concert, and everyone's holding up their phone, staring at the phone, the recording of the live concert. But were you really at the concert? Like, your phone documents that you were there, but did you really take part in it? Were you really paying attention? Were you really a part of it and felt it?
Yeah.
No, because you were too busy trying to record it, you know, and the same thing happens with investigations. So, yeah, set up your equipment, document what you want, try to catch something so you can show your friends and freak out people. Awesome. But make sure you're a part of it, because glimpsing and coming that close to what seems to be almost intangible is just one of the most remarkable things.
Yeah. No, I agree. And people always say when I'm investigating, they're always like, well, do you carry meters with you? What do you do, and how do you get proof? And I'm like, I don't need to get proof. I'm just there to experience what's in the location. So, you know what? I turn my phone on so that I can record sometimes the conversations. I turn the microphone on, and then a lot of times I take pictures.
Yeah.
But I take pictures just because I want to take pictures of where I am anyhow. I mean, I would do that whether it was a haunted place or not. And I find that sometimes you pick up a lot more spirit activity if you're just sort of there hanging and having a good time and enjoying the location, and somebody will just come and attach themselves to you and walk along with you and talk to you.
I totally agree.
If you're coming at people, you know, deceased people or spirits of any kind, if you're coming at them with cameras and lights and meters and stuff that beeps, and I mean, sometimes it scares them and they hide.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. I've always found that the best, you know, evidence per se that I think I've ever gotten on the show has come from, like, when we're sitting around just kind of talking. Like, the last 2 years that I did of Ghost Hunters with KJ McCormick and I would go in, sit in the room, and they don't show everything we always do, but we would literally go in and sit down for like 10, 15 minutes and just talk to each other.
Yeah.
And, like, tell stupid, like, dad jokes and, like, just have a good time.
Yeah.
And just create an inviting environment, like, for somebody to become be a part of. Not just go in there guns blazing and with the stupid, do you know you're dead? Tell me your name. Like,
I know. Are you a little girl? Are you dead? How old were you when you died? It's like, oh, like, people have been asking me that question for 300 years. Could you come up with something else?
Yeah, right. Thank God. I know. That's, I don't know. So that's what I do. I just try to, raise a vibration and get people, you know, involved from this world and the next in an uplifting conversation and something they want to talk about. Like, it just seems to make more sense to do it that way.
Yeah, I would imagine that you probably always have spirits that talk to you because you're such a naturally empathic person, Dustin, that I would think probably everywhere you go, there's something there that talks to talk to you. I'm pretty much the same way. I mean, I get it in places where I'm not even there to be investigating. I'm just there enjoying a historical place and somebody comes and talks to me. But you know, right. I grew up in a haunted house, so I grew up very receptive to that. So they feel me out and they're like, oh, hey, hi. And I'm like, oh, thank you for, you know. I mean, and it's not always people. Sometimes it's animals. It's all kinds of different stuff. So I think if you just sort of, again, right, I guess this is the word of the night. If you just sort of surrender into where you are and say, okay, anything that's in this location that's going to come talk to me, I'm here and I'm open and I'm just going to walk around, enjoy myself, and we'll see what we see. Instead of this sort of aggressive, like, hey, where are you, ghost? I'm going to kick your ass. I mean, that's, I don't think that's working anymore.
No, I don't think it is. And if you do get a reaction, it's not going to be a positive one. And it's usually a one-off reaction where there's no opportunity to follow up. It's like, I'm not there for that. I'm not there for scare tactics and fear factor nonsense. Like, let's just see what's going on. You know, I mean, I live my day-to-day life like that. Like, I don't even check the weather. Like, I don't make a lot of big plans. Like, I've got a huge schedule of events and flights and this, that, and the other. And I usually don't really focus on what I need to do until like the next day comes, because there's so many variables and I just don't want to be so like just weighed down with all these things that people like, you know, this preconceived notions and everything that they think you have to do this and you don't have to do that. And just see where it takes you and just, you know, be part of life, be a part of the adventure and enjoy it.
Yeah, absolutely. Enjoy being in the location and enjoy being, don't go into something with this idea that if I don't catch any hard evidence, then the whole thing was a waste of my time. I mean, you can't.
Right.
Again, like you said, Dustin, you know, we're investigating spirits. A lot of people just hearing us say that out loud would start laughing for 2 days. I mean, you can't take it all so seriously. You're there to have an experience. You're not there, you know, you're not digging up King Tut's tomb. You're there to have an experience with spirits. And it should be something that is organic, and it should be something that just happens. It shouldn't be, I'm going to hunt this ghost out, and I'm going to say, you better talk to me. I mean, it just doesn't work like that.
No, it just seems kind of asinine.
But there are folks that really, you know, they believe that we're in it for the evidence. Like, wow, I'm just in it for the experience. That's kind of like how I am about life, too. I'm kind of also just in life for the experience.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. It's about, you know, the people that you come across, the conversations that you have, the places you get to check out along the way, and you know, so some of my favorite places that I've got to go investigate, and I didn't really get any incredible evidence for the show or for research or any other thing, but had a heck of a good time, you know. Like, when I go out and do my lectures and everything, I always tell people, listen, I hope you enjoy this tonight, but to be quite honest, I'm here to enjoy this myself. And if I'm not entertained, then I don't want to do it anymore.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah. When did you start teaching and lecturing and giving workshops, and how much do you love that?
Oh my God, it's like my favorite thing to do. I feel so alive when I'm like in front of a crowd and like telling my stories and putting my motivational messages and stuff out there. You know, with the shows and stuff, obviously, you know, that started, oh man, probably around at least 9, 10 years ago, I guess. And it goes like, no, maybe about 8 years ago, I think I started, because I had a bunch of other things going on, but I really didn't like hammer down with doing a ton of it until like 2-3 years ago. Like, I had managers and this and that, and they were good enough. You know, I appreciate everything they did, and you know, they get me 12-15 things a year, you know. But I keep setting goals for myself. Like, in 2016, I started booking myself, because I always feel like, listen, nobody's going to believe in you more than you believe in you.
Yeah.
And I've got a couple of people, like my friend Lindsay Center with Center Stage Events. Like, she gets me some gigs and stuff, and I send her some people, you know, to put contracts together. And she's a very, very nice person, very smart, and so I appreciate what she does for me there. But majority of the stuff I still do by myself. And last year, you know, I set a goal of doing 50 events, knowing that 3 years ago I did about, you know, 15. Last year, I said, I'm going to try to do 50 this year, you know, and I think I ended up doing like 46 or 48. And so I said, all right, next year, we're going to end up getting 50. And this year, I think I've got one or two contracts still out there, but we've done it. Like, I've made 50 events on the year.
Wow.
And those lectures, like, yeah, like, there's finances involved. You know, it's not as much as some people think, because they think they're on TV, like they're a millionaire. But it's, and honestly, the motivational stuff probably puts less in my pocket than anything else I do, including like my day job. But nothing means more to me than doing those lectures and speaking to people and trying to teach ways of light and love, and especially with the kids and stuff. You know, the stuff I do with suicide prevention, like these are things that I think matter. These are the things that I think are important. And yeah, I can go up and tell you ghost stories. I'm going to have a good time and everything. And your dance with who brought you. And I love the paranormal, and I always will. But I don't get through a paranormal lecture without throwing in some motivational stuff either.
Because, yeah, I don't either.
I'm going to give you what you came for, but I'm also going to give you what you don't even know you need.
Yes. I'm exactly the same way. Whether I'm teaching radio, whether I'm teaching acting, whether I'm teaching the paranormal, it doesn't matter what I'm doing. It always winds up being spiritual. I mean, this show is supposed to be, but I mean, even my daily show, right? How many shows have we done? And we always wind up taking it here, because to me, there's a spiritual hum, right? There's an undertone. There's a spirituality that runs through everything on the earth. And it's always there. The energy is always there. The vibration is always there. And so it's applicable to everything that you could be talking about and everything that anybody is doing. And it's certainly extremely applicable in the paranormal.
Yeah, no, completely. Absolutely. I think there's so much room for that conversation. And I think that it kind of, the paranormal lends itself to that gateway. And, it's funny because I'll still meet some people like, oh, well, you know, I'm not a religious or spiritual person. I'm like, then what the heck are you doing this for? Like, this doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I don't understand that either. But I feel the same way from having worked with artists for years. When people say, oh, I'm an artist and I don't believe in anything. I'm like, really? What do you think happens when you're performing and you walk out on stage and it's like you blink your eyes and 2 hours has passed and the curtain's going down? What do you think's happening in there? Because that's the God channel coming in and helping you out. Like, how do you miss that? But some people, you know, they just want, I think a lot of folks want to believe. My mom used to always say that human beings are just smart enough to be dangerous. And I really believe that a lot of folks want to believe, they relax in the comfort of their knowing that being a human being is the most evolved and smartest thing that you could ever imagine in the entire universe. That thought terrifies me. If we die and it turns out there's nothing and humans were it, I'll just scream from the beyond for the rest of my life. But I love the idea that there's something that's so much bigger than humans, but some people really fear that.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's weird. It's this constant battle between the material world and the spiritual. And I think that a lot of us really anchor ourselves here, and we anchor ourselves and tether ourselves down with all the plastic shiny nonsense that we order off Amazon and all the other things that make us have our little creature comforts that we say, this is my world. And we've tried to become, you know, king of our own little world. And it's just so foolish. You know, I personally, like, this is why I go out for at night and like take my walks around in the forest. And I like to go sit by the water at night. And I like places that are large enough to make me feel small. I like to look up at the stars and realize how insignificant really each one of our little struggles can be, no matter how they're important to us. And yeah, they're important to us. I get that. But in the grand scheme of things, it's hard. It's hard to say that. It's like us looking down into, you know, an ant farm and thinking like, you know, this one little ant's the most important thing in the whole world, because that's what he's thinking. It doesn't work that way. It's much bigger than all of us are. It's much bigger than all of us can ever understand. And that's the beauty of it. And I'd love to feel small in a big world and feel seemingly just insignificantly, yet unceremoniously just kind of drifting across the abyss and just living the experience and knowing that everything's going to be okay, that there's a bigger thing at work here that I'll never understand, and the beauty is I don't even have to.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's part of the problem, right? It's when human beings don't have that feeling of surrender, when they're not filled with that, they really believe that they're not being taken care of, that they're not loved. You know, I have so many people when I teach and I coach spiritually, that'll say like, well, I just know that the universe hates me, or God doesn't know I exist. And I always say, wow. I mean, I can't even imagine wanting to live on the earth and coming from that perspective. I mean, you have to know that you're perpetually being taken care of. and that it's not, you know, that there's nobody hates you and no one's forgotten about you. And, you know, higher power knows we're here. But I think there's a fear, right, that God has forgotten about me. And I think that the world would be a much more lovely place if everybody understood how protected they were being by the universe all the time.
Yeah, for sure. You know, we have to realize that all of our lives are being woven together into a bigger tapestry that we can't appreciate from our viewpoint. And it's like a little stained glass window. Like, we have this one broken fragment, and we're like, what the heck am I going to do with this? Like, this is horrible, but we don't see how it all fits into everything else. And yeah, we're going to have our horrible moments, for sure. Like, none of us, that's one of the beauties, I think, about the human existence. As much as it sucks at times, not one of us is excused from the misery that comes with this life. Nobody gets a free pass. There's always going to be something on some level somewhere in your life that's going to hurt. And that pain is a universal truth for all of us.
Yes.
And it's going to happen, but it doesn't mean that that's the end of the road. It just means it's going to happen because none of us are exempt from it. And that's okay, you know? And people, like, will turn around and say, well, God allows this to happen. God allows that to happen. It's like, well, first off, like, we're here as an extension of the spiritual beings, and I think that we should be doing things to make things better, not just sitting there. And like, and I'm all for prayers being sent, and I believe a lot in the power of prayer and such. But we also need action, and we have to look for opportunities to do good. And sometimes that means we need to get uncomfortable and do things that we wouldn't normally do. But if we're going to make great positive change happen, it doesn't happen from sitting on your couch saying, I wish this would happen. I really wish this wouldn't happen. Like, that doesn't work. You need to do things.
Yes. Yes, I agree. Well, and that's what the universe wants us to do. I mean, in my ideology, it's all about, you know, you're sort of in soul school. You're learning lessons to become, you know, a more lovely person a more lovely soul, a more lovely and evolved soul. So that, you know, when you are no longer embodied and you're in the beyond, then you are helping others that are there. So, you know, it's not about just like, oh, it's not a free trip to Disneyland where God takes care of everything. Because what would be the purpose of that? You know,
it's not supposed to be easy.
No, but to me, there's not, I guess because I'm somebody who, in the three-dimensional world, I like a challenge. I don't mind something being tough if there's a great reward, or if it's for something, or if I'm helping someone. So, you know, I don't need for life to be easy. Easy is not a requirement. It took me a while to realize why it's not fair, and to see the fairness that I didn't see before, and how it seemed like it was unfair, but it was really fair. That took me a little while to wrap my brain around. And I find that when I work with people that I'm coaching and that I'm doing vibrational motivation with, that's a question they ask a lot. Like, why is it not fair? Because I think people think, well, if you do A and B, then you should get C. If something costs $50 and you have $50, you buy the thing and then you have it. It's different in the God world. It doesn't necessarily work like that. And if it does, it's more like a silly straw. It goes around a lot of different ways and you don't even realize you're getting what you want until you're done, right?
Yeah, totally. And I also think, you know, because the fairness thing is a tough one to grasp, for sure. Because it's like, well, I'm living a good life and I'm doing this and this. How come this doesn't work? Like you said, like A and B don't equal C all the time. Like, what happens? But I think that we have to realize that God is being unfair. You're right. But he's also unfair in his forgiveness. Because look at all the things that we screw up. Look at all the bad things that we do, because none of us are perfect.
Right.
Yet we still get forgiven. We still get let off on things. So, yeah, you know what? Maybe some things are unfair, but damn if it's not consistent, because I think it equals out. The bad that we do that we feel regret for and we feel remorse for, I think that kind of averages out with some of the things that we do really good and we're expecting a great outcome and it doesn't happen. It's like, because it can't work that way all the time. But I think it balances out. And I think in the end, we come out ahead for sure because of forgiveness and love and mercy.
Well, I think that's a human thing, I think. We want someone to fix everything for us when it's not something we did. When it is something we did, we don't want to be held accountable for it. So I just think that's,
exactly,
that's
right.
A human
great things I did.
Exactly. I want you to go fix that guy that didn't do what I wanted him to do. But when I didn't do it, that's different because that's me. I mean, I think that's just right. That falls under mom's category of just smart enough to be dangerous. So then let me ask you something about the paranormal world. So from a spiritual perspective, how do you feel about spirits that were human beings that were alive that now aren't, that haven't yet crossed over to where they maybe need to be? Maybe they know they don't need to be there. Maybe they know they need to be right there they are. But as a spiritual person, where does that hit you? I mean, how do you feel about that? Why do you think they're there? Do you think people should cross them over or not? I mean, what are your feelings on all of that?
My understandings of this are not always on par with a lot of other people, which is fine, because we can't all think from the same end if we're ever going to get anywhere. But so the Gospels, right? The Gospels that they all put together, we've got the Gnostic Gospels, and we've got things that didn't quite fit because of the political regime at the time that were written, and at the time, you know, were revered. But then when we were putting together the Bible, like, well, this doesn't really fit exactly the other agenda we have, so let's just skirt this one under the rug. Let's just delete this one. And I believe that the Bible was inspired by man, by God, but put together by man, and therefore sure. It's not perfect. It's the best guidebook that we have, right next to that little small voice in your heart and your soul that tells you what's right and wrong. But it's not perfect, you know. And people also bend the good that's in there and twist it to further their own agendas and things, you know. So it's not a perfect guidebook, but there's a lot of good in there. And I feel like in one of the books that was left out, that was written, some of the Dead Sea Scrolls, they believe, were written by the Essenes. And the Essenes were most likely the group that was closest to Christ when he was here and when he was growing up. And they mentioned that the spiritual world is all around us, but mostly unseen. It's not usually visible to us. Some of my psychic and medium friends, they will mention that the afterlife, the heaven, isn't that far away. So a lot of times I think that we get caught up in our own human understandings, and we use the word trapped a lot. They're trapped here. They're trapped. We need to help them move on. We need to do this for them. They are trapped. I don't believe so much that anything would ever, or anyone would be trapped. I think that a loving deity, however you perceive him or her, would allow for forgiveness and understanding and for allow to passage into the afterlife. So I think it's not as far away as we think. And I think visitation is allowable. And I think that a lot of times, you know, I've noticed from just people writing to me and my own experiences and all the people I've talked to over the years, it seems like there's a 2 to 3 week window after they pass away where people seem to visit more often than not and then kind of go their way. And then when we, the living, go through a tough time and we're looking for that sign and we're looking for that person and we need an affirmation, things are going to be okay, sometimes they'll show up just when we need that little bit of a symbol or a sign to let us know that we're still doing okay and we're going to be on the right path. There are some that I think do linger a little bit longer than others. I think some maybe feel like they're just not ready to go yet, but I don't think that they're ever trapped yet. I think some just visit more often than not. And I think a lot of stuff that people think are trapped entities or trapped souls is just residual sound and images that they see. So I think that there is forgiveness and love for all and that everyone's allowed to move on. Just some of us, you know, kind of want to hang out a little bit more. We visit more. But I don't think anyone's ever stuck.
Yes. Yeah. And I think sometimes you're stopping yourself from moving on. Just like you can stop yourself from doing a lot of things. I mean, it's, you know, I think that the consciousness that remains with you post your biological, you know, meat sack dying, withering, is that sometimes you know you should pass on, but you're still hung up and hitched up on something. I mean, you know, some people, look how some people fight actually dying. You know, I had a relative who was dying when I was a kid. It was very scary. I don't know what he'd done in his life. And my mom used to always say, God, what did he do? But at the very, very end, as he was dying, he was screaming. My mom used to say he was screaming at St. Peter with all his might. He was screaming at somebody like, I never did that. That's a rotten, filthy lie. And I don't know where you're getting your information, but I never did that. My mom used to always say, God, I imagine some angel on the other side with just like a giant scroll of things this guy had done just rolled out in front of him like, and then you did this, and then you did that. You know, so I think sometimes... You know, I had a guest once on the show that was investigating an Irish castle, and the medium had a conversation that they caught on tape with this spirit that had died like in the 1300s. And for whatever reason, had stolen an apple and was hiding out in this castle because at the time you could be put to death for stealing an apple. And because that was where his consciousness was, he was quite sure when he crossed over something horrible was going to happen to him. So, I mean, I think you see that, right? Where folks are stuck for their own thing.
Right. Again, I don't like to use the term stuck, but I think that maybe they're not so inclined to move ahead because of their own understandings. You know, they're limited by their own knowledge, which is based in what we learned while we were here going through our human experience. You know,
You
view the afterlife as fire, brimstone, and punishment, you're probably not too excited to take that next step, you know. But I think that there is, I think there is always forgiveness and love for people. And I think they just need to kind of give themselves the chance to get there.
I agree. And I agree. I understand why you don't like the word trapped. And I didn't mean trapped like, you know, trapped by a force.
No,
I mean that sometimes we trap ourselves. I mean, we do it in life all the time, right? You decide one day, I'm never going to get in an airplane because it will crash. And you limit your life to never go anywhere because you're convinced you can't get in an airplane. And I think that kind of consciousness sometimes stays with us if we decide to remain earthbound. I had a near-death experience that, I mean, was probably, you know, in actual time, like a second and a half long, but it maybe seemed like 10 minutes in my consciousness at the time. And I think once you actually go home, I like to call it, for a couple of minutes and realize what's waiting for you there and how it's, you know, all the pain is gone and there's no emotional pain. There's no physical pain. It's all about love and warmth and understanding and being protected. You would understand that, you know, probably even if you stole that pesky apple, you should just go home and receive that love. But I think it's, sometimes it's a fear, right? Sometimes kids run away for almost nothing and they're scared to go home. They've convinced themselves their parents will hate them forever for whatever reason. I think sometimes we do the same thing, you know, after we've passed where we convince ourselves, oh, I can't cross because of dot, dot, dot. And so it's not so much that they're trapped is that sometimes we trap ourselves.
Yeah, no, for sure. Just like a lot of us just grow stagnant in this life because we're afraid to move forward, you know?
Absolutely.
And I just think going forward is the most important thing across the board. Like, that's something you need to just focus on. Like, constantly going forward, constantly evolving, constantly getting uncomfortable and saying, okay, let's see what happens if I do this. Like, I just can't keep doing the same thing. Like, I need to try a new thing.
Right. I agree. And I think it's definitely harder if you've died in some super traumatic way. Sometimes it's harder to, it's more easy to be a little disoriented and maybe not understand as much about where you are and how easy it is to move on. Because I think, like, when you're a living person and you've had a traumatic experience, sometimes it's hard to move forward in your life.
No, yeah, for sure. I mean, that's why people have trouble, you know, after relationships and loved ones pass away and things. It gets very difficult for people to move forward. And it's one of those things. Like, I don't want people to, you know, to think that it's not okay to look back. It's good to look back and remember where you've been, where you came from, and those that you've loved and those that you've lost and those that we've parted ways with. But it's so much more important to move forward. So I have one of my lectures is the Magical Mystery Box, right? And so it's this plastic box filled with all these little items, and it's an interactive one, so people can come up and they pick something out of the box. I ask them why. We share a little moment together, and they sit down and I tell them the story of what this thing represents. And so I have a rearview mirror in one of the boxes, and the rearview mirror just shows us that, listen, you've got this hanging in your car, right? Because you need to see where you've been, and you need to see what, you know, what has happened to you in the past. But your windshield, in comparison, is much bigger because where you're going is so much more important. And so you need to focus forward. And it's like I said, it's good to look back and reflect, but you can't stare there the whole time. You'll never get to where you're really supposed to go.
That is so absolutely true. And that is 100% fantastic advice, whether you're living or recently deceased. It's the exact same advice. So what do you mostly, when you teach or when you give workshops or lecture, however you want to phrase it, Dustin, what do you mostly do? What?
I really like this idea of teaching. It makes me feel like maybe I should have a little bit of respect. I appreciate
that. But
it
is, right? I mean, it is teaching.
No, you're absolutely right. I just never thought of it that way. So what do I do? I'm kind of like one part motivational speaker, one part therapist, one part comedian. Like, I get up there and I have a good time. The lectures are all a little different. So, like I said, I've got this, you know, my mystery box thing, which really, it's great for adults and kids. I've got the emoji lecture, which I have 101 slides of emojis that illustrate a story that I tell about our default setting and happiness and our focus. And then, you know, I've got my series of my Christmas ones that all kind of take apart different Christmas stories people are familiar with in cartoons and things, and analyze the characters and in a positive, motivational way. And I try to entertain people, and I try to get them to realize some of the bigger truths in life. And I try to get them to understand that it's okay. The things that have happened to us in our lives, it's okay. It's okay to have been hurt. It's okay to have hurt someone. It's okay to know that you did something wrong, as long as you've learned from it and you're moving forward. It's not okay to consciously make bad decisions. But we're not slaves to who we were. Every day is a shot at redemption, and every day we have a shot to be a better person than we were yesterday. And if we can just get together and move forward, even by tiny increments every day in kindness and love and working toward building a better tomorrow, I really believe that we can do that. And I just want people to kind of let themselves off the hook for some things and not carry such a great burden, and not worry about what people think about them, but to really let go and take that step in faith and try to live a life focused on love and kindness and caring and compassion and mercy, and just see what happens, because we're not moving forward the other way. And you can't be fearful all the time. You have to go forward in faith and not live in fear. And it's not easy. And it's okay that it's not easy, because as we talked about earlier, It's because it's not easy that it's worth doing, you know, and through our mistakes, we get stronger. And by moving forward together, we can achieve great things. And I know a lot of people think I'm very foolish for talking about it all the time, but I'm not going to change, because this is, to me, the most important thing. And I want to someday, when I pass away, know that I've left a legacy of kindness and love. And, you know, if I can't change the world into a more positive place, I'm going to die trying. But either way, I know I'll have done my best.
Isn't it so interesting that you and I have sort of found the same path and are doing almost the same exact thing? Because my workshop, I do a workshop called I Am Raising My Vibration, where I teach people how to raise their own vibrations. And it's so similar to that. It's a lot about giving yourself a break. It's a lot about understanding that positive and negative things will happen to you throughout your life, and how to keep your vibration high through all of it. And it's about implementing more positivity, more optimism, more peace, more love, more kindness, you know, feeling more a part of something and less disconnected from something. I mean, it's kind of what you do. I guess you never thought of it as teaching. I never thought of it as motivational speaking, but I guess it kind of is in a way.
Yeah, for sure. I think we're both on the right path together, no
exactly.
matter which way you look at
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
Sure.
And people need it. I just got back from teaching at a spiritual convention in Dallas last week. And I have to tell you, I've never been to Dallas, and it's such a lovely city, and the people were so wonderful. And, I mean, to reach people and to have people come up to you afterwards, and I did, you know, private sessions with a lot of folks throughout the weekend, too, to have people come up and say, like, I just didn't have any idea how to get out of these things that I'm feeling. And now I'm feeling like there's a way out. I mean, that's all I want, is to show people, you know, I always think of it. I'm a very claustrophobic person. And you know, the movies where people get stuck in the avalanche and they're stuck in the snow cave. And I'm always like, God, I can barely watch this because I'm so claustrophobic. And then somebody sees a light and they start tunneling towards it. If I could just be the little pinprick of light so that people understand that there is a way out and they can start tunneling in that direction, then my job is done. Because people think they're stuck, and they're not. They're not stuck. There's always a way. There's always a direction you can move in.
Right. No, exactly. You got to hold on to hope, and it's a slippery thing. It's not easy, for sure, and I get that. But if you don't have hope, you don't have much. And I think that you just need to understand that. And it's a great analogy that you put out there, one that I like to use a lot for people, and I
for myself and also for them to think about is sometimes we try to reach people in our lives, friends, family, coworkers, or whatever, that we, you know, we think that are in a dark place, or we think that, you know, could use a little help. And sometimes, you know, when people are in such a tumultuous portion of their life, somebody coming at them with light and love is off-putting. I always think about, I remember the story of, I was driving on the road, during the time of, I was doing college lectures. It was when the Chilean miners were trapped underground.
Uh-huh.
And they had finally found a way to get these guys up, you know, and they got them out. And then, they all had to wear sunglasses, even though the light wasn't bright around them. They were so used to being in pitch dark conditions. Their eyes were not adjusted. And I think that's, you know, important for us to realize, too. You come at somebody who's in a dark spot in their life, sometimes you're shining a little bit too brightly. And, you know, it's like one of those morning people coming up to you at the office, and you're just trying to shift gears and, you know, get that coffee down and just get things moving. And they're like, hey, good morning, how are you? And it's like, oh, my God, please shut up and just go away. I don't want to be bothered. So when somebody comes at you like that and they're trying to motivate you, make you feel better about life, and you're like, no, it's not like that. It's not like that when you're alone. Don't feel like it's a wasted experience. Don't hit them over the head with it. But sometimes all you have to do is plant that little seed and have faith that you've done your job. You've planted that seed of hope, and that the universe and the other people that are going to come along are going to do their job to fertilize it and to water it and to spend light on it and help that person to grow. But you just have to do your part. You may not see it all the way through. You don't have to. Just do your part.
Absolutely. That's absolutely true. And just work on you a little bit every day. I think some people think that it has to be all changed in a minute. You know, before I did the workshop, I did one-on-ones with people. And, you know, I'd sit down with somebody and they'd say, you know, I can't fix this all in a day. And I would laugh and say, well, right. Well, of course, I don't expect you to. The God doesn't expect you to, and you shouldn't expect you to. Like, no one is expected to fix everything in a day. It's about little tiny baby steps of, did I do a little something wonderful? I mean, I tell people when I speak on behalf of my movement, I say, look, think about just getting to the goal of being 5% kinder every day. I mean, when you think about it, that's nothing. 5%. Just 5%. Think of things you can do to become 5% kinder every day. Because if everybody in the world became 5% kinder every day, the tsunami of kindness that would overtake the everything instantly would be astronomical. It's just 5%.
I'd settle for 3% if everybody would just get on board.
Exactly. We'll come down on the percentages. Just everybody start doing it. But I mean, you know, what is 5%? It's some extra pleases and thank yous and open a door for somebody and think of something nice to do for somebody. You know, make somebody a bowl of soup. I mean, it's nothing when you think about it. But it's just...
Right?
It's
so
just...
I set little challenges for myself, like random little things, but like this is a great little like pathway to it, you know? And then the other day, my customary little ritual is, you know, I get up in the morning, get ready, and I go to stop at Dunkin' before I go to the gym, grab my coffee. And I always go in, and I always make a point to hold the door for somebody, or, you know, maybe buy a donut for somebody or something. But the other day I told myself, I'm not leaving until I've done 5 nice things.
Good.
So whether that be like pay for somebody's coffee, hold the door for somebody, like get them a straw, like I had to do 5 things before I was allowed to leave the Dunkin' Donuts. And like when I left, I was like, it didn't take as long as I thought, like just a couple of minutes, you know. But those little interactions might have meant something to one of those people, you know. And if it did, then fantastic.
How much do I love that you stop at Dunkin' every day? Could you be any more of a New Englander than you are?
Oh, I know, right? I was so good, though. Like, I didn't even drink coffee until I was 30. And then my wife was pregnant. I would stop and get her a nice coffee and bring it home for her. And then, like, I didn't want to spill in my truck. So I'd, like, have a little sip. Then I realized, like, my coffee is basically, it's a nice latte and it's basically a milkshake. It's like,
right.
I need, you know, so much, you know, sugar, and I need so much, like, mocha flavor and pumpkin flavor. Like, there's hardly any coffee in it. But that's part of the ritual now, you know. And then I go to the gym to work off the calories from the coffee. So it's you know, we're breaking even, but we're doing okay.
That's why I never started drinking coffee, because I knew that I would have to add so much sugar and milk to it that it would basically be a coffee milkshake. And by the way, I've had a coffee milkshake and I love that. But
fantastic.
I didn't need to implement another sweet thing in my life. And then I was a teaaholic.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I'm one of those weirdos that, like, never drank, never did a drug, no cigarettes, no coffee ever. But then I'm completely addicted to sugar. So I quit sugar, and then I was completely addicted to caffeine. And I used to go to Starbucks, you know, because I'm an L.A. person, so that's like the Dunkin' Donuts of Los Angeles. I would go to Starbucks and have them get me a giant tea, warm, no ice, no water. So the thing was almost like tea sludge. I'm Irish, so bear with me, Dustin. It was like a tea sludge, and I would drink like the top inch and a half off it and then fill it with half and half and then put cinnamon and nutmeg in it. And if I was at home, I'd put clove in it. So it was basically like a bucket of Charles Dickens Christmas. And
It sounds delicious.
And it was, you know, it was awake. So it was like English breakfast, kind of. When I was home, I would steep an English breakfast, an Irish breakfast, and an Earl Grey together. And, you know, steep it for like days until it was almost a solid. I mean, it was crazy. But then my blood pressure was so high that I probably should be dead. So I had to quit the caffeine. So now when I'm out and everyone's having dessert, I will socially drink a chamomile. But it's just, it's not the same as it was with the caffeine. There was something about that feeling when the caffeine just really punches you in the solar plexus, but I just can't anymore.
See, I don't know. The caffeine doesn't seem to really do anything to me. Like, I've tried extra turbo shots, I've had espresso, all this stuff. It doesn't seem to have any effect because I'm pretty much always in full gear, like, ready to go anyway, you know. But the sugar became a problem. Like, I was putting 10 sugars in the coffee every day.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And I'd only have one a day. But I'd have 10 in there. And then I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, you know, your sugar is really high. And I just looked at him like, well, I eat a lot of sugar.
Exactly.
Not surprised. Like, I chew the bottom of my coffee. So, but then he told me I was pre-diabetic. I was like, oh, okay. And I literally that day quit, like cold turkey, no more sugar in the coffee or anything. But I do have to have at least my flavor shot because I need a little something to kill the coffee taste.
I did the same thing when I quit the caffeine. I just think that tea doesn't have the same appeal to me. There's something about a decaffeinated Earl Grey that just seems wrong.
Yeah, no, for sure. I like the sleepy time tea. That's my favorite. I like the sleepy time tea with a Benadryl chaser, and I can sleep for like 10 hours.
Nice. Okay. All right. So I would suggest a really good organic chamomile is also a sleepy time type tea. And
there we go. I don't get to sleep very often. I'm working like constantly. So the days come where I can sleep, I really sex it up a bit. You know, I had a nice hot shower. I get the tea ready. I mean, it's really like a romantic encounter for me.
Nice. I love that. Yeah. I liked the clarity that caffeine brought. But since I quit the caffeine, and especially since I quit the sugar, I don't know if you've noticed this since you reduced your sugar, but there is, like any drug, and I've never done drugs, which is probably why I don't know this, but sugar blocks your connection to the whole. And I am a much more spiritual person since I've quit sugar.
When I was on the international show, Barry used to chastise me about my eating habits because of investigating. And I used to, super like carbs, like tons of carbs, tons of sugar. He's like, you're not connecting because of this and that. And he was working with me, like with guided meditation and everything. So then finally, like, I was like, okay. I was like, I'll drink tons of water and I'm not going to like have this, that, and the other. And like, he was right. And it started working much better after that.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, I mean, I always was spiritual in theory and in practice, but my connection level is so much more intense since I quit the sugar. Yeah.
I feel you.
I mean, I understand why people do a lot of sugar, because it covers up a lot of your pain and insecurity and anxiety and, you know, the same reason that people smoke pot and drink and do drugs. I mean, you do it to buffer the severity of the world. But I find that there's such a beauty in being completely sober from a spiritual standpoint. You just have to, one, put filters up. You have to make your own filters to protect you. And that sometimes is a bitch kitty until you learn how to do it. And then you also have to be okay to live in the surrender. And a lot of people are just not okay with that. And then I was like, that's a part of what I teach in my workshop and what I teach when I coach people one-on-one is that I know you hate the idea of the surrender, but once you get to that place, oh my God, it feels so good, right? I know we talked about this already, but I'm bringing it up again. It feels good to surrender.
It really does. It's like jumping out of a plane. It's petrifying, until you do it. And then once you do it, it's beautiful and there's no going back.
Yeah. Have you jumped out of a plane?
I did. It was amazing. I want to do it again.
That's awesome.
I'm not going to do it anytime soon, though. I promise my daughter when she gets older, when she's like 18 or something, we'll go do it together.
Okay. How old is your daughter?
She's 11 now.
We still got
some time for sure. But
wow. So she was a baby.
That's my goal.
She was a baby the first time you did my show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. Time goes by like crazy, right? Isn't that nuts?
It's insane. And speaking of which, we have to take a break. Then we're going to be right back with the wonderful Dustin Perry right after this. It's Raising the Vibration on LA Talk Radio. We're at RaisingTheVibrationRadio.com at LATalkRadio.com. I'm at SheenaMetal.com. We can find us on social media. I'm at SheenaMetal everywhere. I am RaisingTheVibration.com is our movement site, and also our new nonprofit hub is being built right now at RaisingTheVibration.org. Quick break, and we're right back with you with much more spiritual talk and talk about the world and positivity and optimism and joy and give back and all those words that I love and I love discussing with the fantastic Dustin Perry right after this.
You're listening to Raising the Vibration with Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Larry Russ, former keyboardist and vocalist for Iron Butterfly, and I'm here to tell you about that abuse is an epidemic in our world. Abuse has many forms, spousal and child abuse, sex and human traffic victims, and sexual abuse. Musicians Against Abuse wants to do something about it, and you can help. Contact maabuse.com. That's maabuse.com. Join me and let's do something about it. maabuse.com.
Alcohol-related harm affects us all. Everyone knows someone who's been touched. Alcohol-related harm ranges from lost jobs to serious mental and physical disease, from ruined family life to property damage, from violent crime to homelessness, death, or prison. Go to alcoholjustice.org and sign up for action alerts and e-news. Then you'll be ready to add your voice to many others when it's time to call for action that will reduce alcohol-related harm.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro, and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. So join me 8 p.m. Pacific Time, 11 p.m. Eastern Time at www.latalkradio.com on Channel 1. And let's explore All About Guitar.
When was the last time a song made a difference in your life? If you're a songwriter who would like to help the victims of the recent hurricanes, your music can make a difference. By offering one song download for just $1, you can help bring aid and hope to those in need. To find out more information and join songwriters Michelle Mangione and Grace Slick in this effort, please visit writersforthestorm.com. That's WRITERS forthestorm.com.
As difficult as it is to believe, there are places in Africa where human traffickers sell albino children and their body parts for use in magic rituals. Humanity Healing International is actively working in Uganda to change this paradigm. The Albino Rescue Project finds albino children who are at risk and places them in safe schools and environments where they can learn and grow free from fear. To learn more or to sponsor a child, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is.
When Debbie Fragner gave birth to Maddie, she imagined a world of possibilities. But when her daughter was diagnosed with cerebral palsy, a neurological condition that impacts a person's ability to move and maintain balance, she had to adjust her expectations. Cerebral palsy affects 1 in 323 children in the U.S. While this diagnosis may limit Maddie's physical abilities, it doesn't limit her ability to dream. Maddie is now 9 and has a dream to dance, which inspired the creation of the Children's Cerebral Palsy Movement, a nonprofit dedicated to the design and funding of innovative therapies that address not only the physical challenges of these children, but their dreams as well. As part of their Community Giving Day program, Whole Foods Market will donate 5% of net day sales to our movement on June 15th at their Tustin location and June 22nd in Newport Beach. Your purchases on these days will help further our cause. For more information, please call 714-746-4085. That's 714-746-4085.
Hi, my name is Michael Vaccaro. I have a groovy web series called Child of the 70s with some really groovy people in it, including Bruce Valanche, Jerry Jewell from The Facts of Life, Ted Lange from The Love Boat, comedian Judy Tenuta, Carolita White from Laverne and Shirley, Ann Walker from Sordid Lives, Amy Linker from Square Pegs, Gina Heck from Mork and Mindy. We have Johnny Hazard, Leo Forte, Terry Ray, Chuck Sekula, and LA Talk Radio legend Sheena Metal. I play this guy who idolizes a 1970s TV star, but then he gets a job as her personal assistant. You know how they say that you should never meet your personal idols? Well, you know, you can find us on YouTube, Funny or Die, Out TV, and you can also go to our website, www.theofficialchildofthe70s.com. It's groovy. Hey, did I say that already? Yeah, it's groovy. I'm a
child of the 70s. OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
I'm Sue Hamilton, and on November 9th, 2016, Artists Rise Up Los Angeles was created in response to the election and its results.
Through original theater and art, Arula creates and inspires positive political and social change.
And gives all its proceeds to charitable organizations such as ACLU and Planned Parenthood.
Join us
at artistriseupla.com
or on Twitter at artistriseupla.
Did you know that healthcare institutions provide arts programming for patients, families, and staff because of their healing benefits? Shorter hospital stays, better pain management, and less medication. Believe in the art. Go to www.mvcaf.org and click the donate button on any page. Support the Moreno Valley Cultural Arts Foundation.
This is Melanie Wise with the Artemis Women in Action Film Festival. Your mission, should you choose to accept it, is to help us celebrate and promote physically powerful and empowered images of women in film. Artemis showcases female action heroes, stunt women, female athletes, women in the military, activists, you name it. In today's climate, empowered images of women are more vital than ever. Join our mission to celebrate female heroes. You can do that by going to our website, womenkickass.com, and contributing. Thank you so much.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Raising the Vibration with Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio.
It's Raising the Vibration right here at LA Talk Radio. We're at raisingthevibrationradio.com or at latalkradio.com. I'm your host, Sheena Metal, and I'm at sheenametal.com. And on social media, you can find me everywhere at Sheena Metal. I am also the founder of this movement of peace, love, kindness, and unity. We're at iamraisingthevibration.com. And we are also at raisingthevibration.org. That's our new nonprofit hub that we are moving over to right now, building the site and finishing up our nonprofit status. November 9th of this year, not too far away, we turned 2 years old, and I'm sure we'll be doing something very exciting to celebrate as we did last year. And it's kind of nice because every year I get to celebrate my mom's birthday, not only in my own way, but publicly as we do a big thing for this movement. My guest is the wonderful Dustin Perry, and he's amazing. I'm having a blast with you, my friend. This is so much fun.
Yes, indeed, indeed. Thank you so much again for having me on.
So what were sort of the beginnings of, I know we've talked about this on my daily show, but this is your first time here, with you sort of starting to integrate your spiritual beliefs into what you do publicly?
That started because of just the interaction on social media really started to come about. And people would, you know, they'd first write to me with the ghost questions and stuff. And then because you're on TV, people think you must know what you're doing. So people would write to me about like their jobs and love life and all these other things. And as I always tell everybody, listen, I had time. Like I'm not a party guy, you know, and some of the crew and stuff would like to go out and, you know, I was on the international show. They go and explore the countries and the nightlife, and I would go back to my room and I had the time to answer all these questions and all the messages. So I became like this weird little paranormal Dear Abby, just sitting in my hotel room, you know, the side of the world, preaching love and kindness and trying to bring people together. And,
that's awesome.
I started to come out to events, and people started to come to the table, and they talked to me more about, you know, a message I sent to them. Like, they come up to me and show me a picture of us together at a convention a year ago, and look how much weight I lost since then. Thank you for that. And I'm like, wow, like, I had no idea. You know, sometimes I remember our conversations, and sometimes I don't remember, you know, what I said to them, but I see the impact, and that's the most important thing. That, you know, they just, a lot of times I always have Disney comparisons, but a lot of times I feel like it's, you know, it's like Dumbo. Like, people just need that magic feather. They need someone to give them something to believe in and to know that someone cares and someone's listening. You know, in a time where we live where everything is so tech heavy, we're so connected. Our phones, the internet, we can connect to people all over the world. But the people that are closest to us in our life end up isolated because we're so connected with everything else. And I think that sometimes people just need someone to listen to them and believe in them. And I was happy to and thankful and grateful and humbled to be able to do that for some people so far. And it seems to continue to grow. And it just seems like that is my path more than anything else. And as much as I love all the other things that I do, this will always be the one that I think pays the most dividends and on a soul level.
That's exactly where I am. It's funny because my mother was, you know, before she even came out of the closet as a psychic medium, she was a teacher and a therapist. And my grandmother was a child psychologist. So that was kind of the family business. And I always grew up thinking, I'm never going to sit in a chair and listen to people's problems. Like, that's not going to be my life. And I was, you know, maybe about a year into talk radio 24 years ago. So now 23 years ago, and thinking, oh, I sit in a chair and I listen to people's problems. And I love it. And that's sort of, you know, we were talking earlier about how sometimes you just have to surrender because the universe has a plan and you don't always realize that it's in your best interest. But then when you just surrender and realize and let something bigger and more beautiful than you help you, you realize, oh, yeah, that was what I was supposed to be doing all along. And I've just sort of, though, my whole life has been kind of this face-palming moment of, oh, sitting in a chair listening to people share their problems and helping them with them is where you belong. And especially since, you know, the last couple of years, since I've moved my life really into the spiritual world. I mean, it started like maybe five. I started working kind of undercover, doing things, helping people, working with people one-on-one. But really, since I started this movement 2 years ago, it's been kind of all out there. Have I really begun to realize that not only is it amazing, but it's exactly what I should have always been doing. And I love everything else that I do. I love my entertainment life. I love my paranormal life. I mean, I love all of that. But this is, you know, this is really, like you said, it's what enriches my soul every day. And I feel like it's really my soul destiny. And
I think that, I'm sorry, I lost you there for a second. I think it's interesting that a lot of times what we go to school for, what we think we want, ends up not being the path.
Oh, always.
But
yeah.
It ends up getting us to that path. You know,
yes.
We meet the people at those jobs. We meet the people while we're in school for this or that. That ends up forming a life.
Yes, absolutely. That's 100% true. Absolutely, that's true. It's interesting how, but that's like, you know, if I had it to do over again, you know, hindsight is 2020, right? I would have just surrendered and let the universe tell me what I was supposed to do from minute to minute. But it's, you know, when you're young, you think you know better. And my life is going to be this. And I talk about this on the show all the time and in my workshops, that you grow up deciding what your life is going to be. I was just telling a client this on the phone, you know, earlier before I came, right as I was coming to work today. that you things do not happen on your timeline. They happen on a universal timeline. You can't decide my life is going to be this and it's going to start this day and this is what it's going to be and everything has to move around because it's going to accommodate me. Doesn't always work like that. You kind of have to just be ready and prepared. It's a little like paranormal investigation, right, Dustin? You bring all the stuff. You know how to capture right. it all. You go someplace and you sit in the dark and you surrender, and then you just let the spirits decide if they're going to show up or not. It's very
and,
much
and
like
it's
that.
It's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. It really is. It's hard for people to let go of control.
Yes.
But it's so important, really, because you – it's unbelievable how far you get when you just kind of just follow the flow, you know. And I'm not saying give up. I'm not saying don't try for things, but just allow listen to what's being told to you and follow that path.
Yeah. Yes. And it's interesting because when I was in Dallas, you know, a lot of the folks that were there with me teaching and healing, I think they thought I was kind of crazy because I still left my phone on and my email on. And if I had a client that was not a part of that conference that needed me, I would make the time. So, you know, we would go back to after doing the conference all day, we would go back to the places where we were staying and I would say, okay, nice to see you. I've got some people that need help. I think even some of my friends probably right now think I'm a little nuts because I've just sort of put myself in service 24/7, but you know, I don't have kids and I'm not currently in a relationship and I don't have a lot of obligations. I mean, except to my friends I love and my cat who I think hates me because I'm not home enough. And you know, my mom and I always took care of each other and I took care of her till the end. And now she's moved on to another existence so she can help me in a different way. And,
right.
You know, I don't really belong to anything. I'm untethered for the first time in my life. So if someone needs me and someone needs help, I can just kind of go. And not everybody has that life. Not everybody can live like that. And there were times in my life when I couldn't live like that. But now I can.
Right.
And so I feel like this is my time to be in service. And I know that you very much feel like you're in service, but you also have kids and a partner. And so you've got other things that are your real world obligations that kind of sometimes those get in the way of how much service you can be in, right?
No, for sure. It's a friend of mine back when I worked at CBS News had this little thing in his cubicle that a younger me had lots of questions about. His simple little white pyramid paper that he had. He drew this little pyramid on this little piece of white paper. There you go. I got it out for the second time. And he had written on the top of it God, then he had family and friends, and then underneath it everything else. And I was always like, I'm like, but what about you? How do you not have your family first? Like, how does that not, you know? But then I realized, no matter how much, you know, I love my family, and, you know, especially, you know, the little girl is the center of the world, God comes first. And I believe that he would never guide me in a way that would be, you know, in contradiction to my family anyway.
Yes.
But God comes first, and I follow that path. And everything I do in this world is to operate in kindness and hopefully to further, you know, the kingdom of heaven and to do nice things for good people here and to help people out. And then everything that I do for my family coincides with that. And they're my number one priority, you know, after the spiritual realm. And it's kind of fun to see the way things kind of unfold as we go across, you know, like I see the little things that like my daughter will do for people and stuff, or the conversations that she'll have with my wife and things that she brings up. And she's very thoughtful about things that, you know, as a young child, I kind of had some knowledge of, but wasn't quite as thoughtful about, you know? So I think maybe some of the things she sees me do is maybe rubbing off in a good way. So that's also good, you know? But yeah, it does obviously makes it a little difficult, like especially this time of year, you know, with all the paranormal lectures and stuff, it's like, between her school schedule and you know, dance schedule, my wife running her back and forth to that, like it's not easy to see each other all the time because it's like I've worked a day job. So I'm at the day job, you know, 8 to 9 hours, and I've got an hour and plus traffic on each side, and I get up and go to the gym in the morning while going to sleep. And then when I get out of work, like I go right to, you know, right now it's a lot of library lectures and get that done. And by the time I get home, it's 10 or 11 o'clock. Everyone's back in bed. And then I've got about 5 hours of sleep before I get up and do it again and do it again and do it again. And yeah. The weekend comes, and then I fly out somewhere. Like this weekend, I'm going to Michigan. Then I'll come home Sunday. But that time when I get home Sunday afternoon until I go to bed Sunday night, you know, I spend with the family. And but they know it's these are sacrifices we have to make to take care of things we need to do, and you know, within the monetary structure of the world and stuff, like yeah. The mortgage has to get paid and such. So I have to go do this stuff, but it's nice because you know, I don't absolutely hate my day job or anything. I always tell people, if you hate what you do, find something else, because yes. It becomes a large portion of your time. But find something you love to do on the side. Find a passion that may not pay all your bills, but makes you feel like you're living the way you want to live. And those are my events, and those are my lectures, and the interaction with people, and giving hugs to people afterwards. It seems yeah. like a stupid little thing, but man, it means a lot to me. I love that portion of connecting with people, and just knowing that they enjoyed something that I said. They thought enough to even come spend time with me that night. Hug it out and send them back home with a smile.
I agree. That's absolutely it. Even when I have people on the show here, I don't have to fly somewhere to do that. So that's a nice. But I always think if I want someone to leave happier than they came. So if somebody is yeah. in a better mood when they get done with me than they were when they first called in, then my job is done. I mean, that's it's all. And if people listening are lighter for having listened, then my job is done. I could not even
Absolutely.
Imagine wanting anything else. How often are you out of town? How often do you do conferences and conventions?
So throughout the year, like the months outside of, you know, August, September, October, I'm usually gone one weekend a month, maybe two.
Okay.
December, I'm usually here. January, February, there's not a lot of conventions going on. But I did start doing a lot of Christmas lectures. So I'm throughout New England on weeknights. But for the most part, weekends, I'm home in December. And January, February, like I said, not very popular months. So most of the time, I'm going at least one weekend a month. This time of year, it's pretty much every weekend. And then, you know, I think I have like 26 or something library lectures in October. So there's a lot of late nights, you know. But I'm honored to do it. I'm thankful for the opportunities, and it means a lot to me to do it. And it's an understanding, you know, like the family understands this is what I have to go do. And to be honest, with the little ones' dance schedule so much, I don't think they miss me as much as they used to because they're as busy as I am. So.
Right,
so
sure.
So that helps too.
So you do the library lectures almost every night during this month, and then you're also gone on the weekends a lot?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Like, I mean, this week alone, like tomorrow I've got a gig in math, and then I've got Wednesday is like a twofer. I've got a motivational lecture to school during the day. I'm actually taking time out of work. And then that night, I've got a gig down in Connecticut. And the day after that, I'm back in Mass. And then I'm in Michigan. And then I'm in New Hampshire. And it's just like bam, 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 bam.
Wow.
You know, but it's a lot. But you get to meet so many different people. You know, you're
sure.
like 30 to 50 or more people a night. You get to spend time with some people, and you get to, you know, different stories I get to tell, and the way I weave in the motivational tales and stuff. Like, you come to a lecture about the history of Halloween, like that's my newest one, Halloween, a haunted history. So you come to that and you're expecting to learn about how Halloween came together, and you do. We do. We go back to the Celtic traditions, and we talk about
wow.
paganism, and we go through, you know, the Roman holidays, and we go all the way up to current day. But while we're doing that, we're talking about masks, and we're talking about fear, and we're talking about souls and spirituality, and it comes all together, and we see that in our day-to-day life, many of us still wear masks. It's not just a Halloween thing. We hide behind a brave little smile. We hide behind what we think other people want us to be or want us to look like. And, you know, Halloween was fun because it was one night where you get to dress up as something that you're not. And when you get to do that, it's fun because it's of your choosing. But when you feel forced to wear a mask the rest of your time, It's not fun. And sometimes we have to be brave enough to take those masks off and to step out behind that little smile and have a real conversation with somebody and talk to them about what we're going through. And to be honest, because a lot of us, this is not an easy ride. We're spirits going through a human condition. And for some of us, this experience is not always a pleasant one. But together, we can get through the fear of it, and we can get through the night and get on to live another day.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. So this time of year, a lot of your library lectures are history of Halloween. What else do you do?
So the newest one is Halloween, the Haunted History. And then the other ones I have is Spirits of New England, which I just debuted last year, but I kind of jazzed up a little bit this year. I added a couple more to it. That one I focus on places I've actually investigated in New England. So I'm not just showing you ghost stories and legends. I'm like, here's some, you know, video of a place I investigated here. And I'm not playing evidence. I'm not playing scratchy EVPs or showing blurry photos. I'm talking to you about, like, the history of these places and why they meant something to me, you know. Just this year, I went to Lizzie Borden House and went down to the Ledge Lighthouse down in New London, Connecticut. The Redheaded Hitchhiker Route 44, like places that were a part of my story growing up in New England, the places I checked out and everything. And then I've got another one that's called Documenting from the Dead, and I go back into, you know, the spiritualist movement and communications with the Fox Sisters and rappings and tappings and seance and all the things that go through, you know, the way people try to investigate and to document the other side and why we do those things. So I try to teach people some stuff, and I show them all the nonsense as long as I show them the real stuff and tell them, listen, a lot of people, you know, try to make money off this stuff, and they fake a lot of things. And here's some of the things that they faked over the years, and this is why they do it, you know, so that they have an understanding that I have appreciation for it. And I'm not just there trying to shine a light on you know, all the trickery that gets done, but to get them to understand the realization that the spirit world is such an incredible place and why it means so much to me.
That's fantastic. I mean, that is really awesome. I mean, so many different things that you do and all different kinds of stuff, including, you know, sort of supernatural mythology and the traditions. And that's fantastic. And then what are your Christmas talks like?
Oh, my God, I love Christmas so much. I'm like the real life Jack Skellington. Trust me. Like, I'm known for my Halloween stuff. I'm like, people love the Halloween stuff, but man, I want to talk about Christmas all the time. So last year I debuted, so I have a Christmas version of the Magical Mystery Box where I put all Christmas decorations and different elements that remind us of Christmas in the Mystery Box. So we can do that as a motivational lecture. I've got one called You'll Shoot Your Eye Out, which is based on a Christmas Story movie, you know, where we follow Ralphie and we look at, you know, the father figure, the mother figure, and, you know, his obsession with the gifts. And we look at that and, you know, we tell that story, but in a motivational and understanding way. I've got one that's about A Christmas Carol by Charles Dickens, Lessons Learned from A Christmas Carol. I barely make it through that one without crying because it's just one of my absolute favorite stories. And whole idea of being able to change, you know, and not being away from change.
It's my all-time favorite story. It's my favorite book in the whole world.
It's so good.
Yes.
It really, really is.
I probably
own
every single version of it on DVD. And
all the Mickey ones and everything.
I have so everything. Yes, exactly. The Mr. Magoo one. I'm a little obsessed with it. The Muppets, which I actually think the Muppets is one of the best versions of it. I love it.
Absolutely.
Muppets.
Yeah. And they've got the, what's his name?
Michael Caine.
I can't remember the actor who plays Scrooge.
Yeah, Michael Caine.
Michael Caine, yes, my God, when he's out singing in the streets and stuff, so beautiful.
That one's actually, considering it has Muppets in it, it's actually one of the truest to the Dickens. It's very close in many ways.
Yeah, it follows the book a lot more than a lot of the other versions.
But I just love it.
It's great.
I think it's the perfect, perfect story about humanity.
Yeah, no, I really can't find any reason to disagree with you, you know, I think that's one of the reasons that I end up teary-eyed every time I give it, because it resonates with me so much, you know. Just the character of Fred, his nephew,
yes,
and the little soliloquy that he gives in the old money changing hole when he asks Scrooge, he's like, you know, what reason do you have to be miserable? You're rich enough. And he's like, what reason do you have to be merry? You're poor enough. He says, well, even if it never puts another scrap of money in my pocket, I still believe that that, you know, being kind and merry is good and will do me good. And I just think, man. And
yeah.
He goes on to say that, you know, perhaps Christmas is special because it's that one day a year where we look at each other and look at other souls as fellow passengers on the train through this experience and not just as strangers. And I just think that it really sums it all up, you know?
Yes. Yes. I completely, completely agree with you. It's, you know, I was raised by a woman who had really a horrible life. Like every awful thing you can imagine happening to somebody happened to my mother at some point of her young life. But she used everything that had happened to her to become a kinder person and to become a gentler person. So the example I was, now I'm going to cry. So the example I was raised with was really like, you know, life kind of kicks your butt, but it's happening so that you will become kinder and better and more loving and do more for the world, not to go in the other direction. And so I think that Christmas Carol is a perfect story because it shows you very clearly how he got there, but then also why you can get to that point. You can have things happen to you as Fred did, as his nephew did, and not go in that direction, or like as Bob Cratchit has, right? As Tiny Tim has,
right?
And not go in that direction, go in the opposite direction. And you have a choice. Are you going to let the things that happen to you define you, or are you going to let the things that happen to you make you a better person? And every day we get up and we make that decision, rather like whether we're going to walk the Scrooge path or we're going to walk the Cratchit path, and we decide. And that's kind of the beautiful thing about that story. I mean, I think it's the gift that keeps on giving every year, because everybody needs to see that story over and over and over again, and to realize that every day you can wake up and you haven't missed Christmas. You can change your life every single day. You decide.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's I think people think that it's just an easy thing, but it's a conscious effort. It gets easier, but it's still a conscious effort, you know? And I remember, you know, I tell a story of this back when I was younger, this young lady that I was with for a while, and no ill will toward anybody from my past. I wish everybody the best, but I tell this story just as to make a point. I remember one day, it was a Saturday morning, and I had woken up, and I was all excited because I didn't have to work. I didn't work on Saturdays back then. I was very excited. Saturday morning, and still a young adult, and even to this day, Saturday morning to me is like cartoons and cereal. I'm like, this is going to be great, like, you know? And she wakes up, and before we get out of bed, she says, I'm cranky. I'm like, what's wrong? She's like, well, I'm just miserable today. And I looked, I'm like, but we haven't even got out of bed yet. Like, nothing happened. Well, I'm just miserable. And I'm like, oh, I kind of realized then this was coming to an end. And it's just one of those things, like, you can wake up and be miserable, or you can wake up and be happy.
Yeah.
But like, I'm always going to choose to be happy. Like, no matter what I'm facing, like, I'm going to go at it and give it the best that I've got. And it's not going to be easy, but, you know, and this is the other thing too. A lot of times I notice this with my coworkers, like something will happen during the morning or something at work, you know, and all of a sudden they get aggravated and they're like, oh, this whole day is ruined. And I'm like, well, why would you completely write off this whole day? Like, we just started the day. Like, it doesn't make any sense, you know? And I always use the Etch-A-Sketch. I have a little Etch-A-Sketch in my mystery box. I'm like, every day you have things that you draw and things that you go through and mistakes that you make. But if you make a really bad mistake, it doesn't ruin everything. You just flip it over, you shake it around, and you start again. And that's okay.
Yeah.
You know? But I think some people just are, it's a Monday. You don't like Mondays? Give me all the Mondays from your life. I'll tack them onto mine. I'm going to have a wonderful time with them.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's that conscious decision. Yeah. I had somebody say to me once, no matter how bad the night before is, you wake up and you reset. What's that like? And I'm like, it's actually kind of great, because why wake up the next day and still be so angry, still be so upset, you know? Deal with it, let it go, and then let the next day be a fresh day with a good outlook. I mean, you know,
right. Absolutely.
Why hold yourself in it if you don't have to be in it? But I
think some
people, I think, feel comfortable. There's a comfort in their misery. There's a comfort. We talked about this at the very beginning of the show. There's a comfort in embracing negativity. And
absolutely,
it's what feels comfortable to them. So they're used to it. It's scary to to open up. It's scary to let positivity move through you. It's scary to be optimistic, because what if it doesn't work out, or what if it's terrible? And I'm like, well, what if it is? Then you move on to the next thing. The beautiful thing about life, right, is situations and opportunities just keep coming every day. You just keep living and stuff just keeps happening.
Yeah. And you never know what it's going to be. But if you're not willing to embrace it, if you're not willing to be open to it, if you're automatically of the mindset that nothing good is going to happen, everything's going to be horrible, congratulations. You bait your hook with negativity, you'll catch negativity.
Exactly.
But that's not for me.
Yeah, exactly. No, nor is it for me. And it's always there. If you ever decide you want to run back to negativity, it's not too hard to find.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
always around.
It's not going anywhere. Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely not.
That's why
it's
I've always been
there.
A little...
But you're right, though. It becomes comforting for people, and that's where the danger lies.
Yes. That's why I think I've always been a little... confused with people that go into a haunted place looking for terrible things. Like,
yeah, oh yeah.
Where's the terrible
First
stuff?
First question, is it horrible
right.
where you are?
Is
are
there
you
a,
in pain?
Right.
Like, oh dear God, I'm done.
Is there a demon there? It's like, look, I've never seen
right.
a demon, but I have lived in places and been in places where there was definitely negative spirit activity. And I have known people that have negativity and darkness in them. So I can just imagine what a demon might be like. And I'm sure
right.
it's something that I probably could live my whole life and never see and be perfectly fine.
Absolutely. I always say, you could go look for angels or demons. Why does everybody always ask to see a demon?
Well, it's the same thing. I always say, if there was somebody on one side of the road giving out free pieces of chocolate cake, and on the other side of the road there's an accident, most people would go look at the accident.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
that's something
right.
that I'm hoping, as humans, we're working towards, Dustin, evolving out of that obsession with all things negative and embracing, you know, as we move into a new age and the veil lifts, embracing things that are more positive and that are more of the light. And that's, you know, something a lot of what I do with this movement as well is convincing people that just stay in the light. Just keep walking your path and keep staying in the light. Because you don't need to be in the darkness, and you don't need to dance with negativity. It's just
no,
not...
by far. And until then, more chocolate cake for us.
Exactly. We will stop and have the chocolate cake, and I can't even eat it anymore, so I'll give mine to you, Dustin. You are wonderful, my friend. Will you come back and we'll do this again soon?
Anytime you want, Sheena. My pleasure.
Thank you. Where can people find you online and find out about everything you're doing and where you're going to be?
Simple enough. It's just DustinParry.com. The last name is P-A-R-I, DustinParry.com. You can go on there and check out all my events and things coming up. Be sure to visit my YouTube channel, which is just YouTube.com/DustinParry. I've got a 60-day program I put on there called Hey, Got a Minute? And each one's only 2 to 3 minutes long, so I won't take up a lot of your time, but I'll leave you with a smile on your face and some good positivity to think and talk about for the rest of the day.
I love that. I love that you have time to do that with as busy as you are. I need to get my butt on the
stick. I don't sleep, love.
Oh, my God. I've done two. I was doing them every month, and then I started going out of town, so I've got a couple to catch up on some videos, but mine aren't a minute,
cool.
So maybe that's why. maybe I need to not talk so much and just talk for a minute. If you missed those links, raisingthevibrationradio.com, latalkradio.com. Send me an email. I will forward the social media from my friend Dustin Parry over to you and have you go and check him out, because he is truly magic. If you want to contact me on social media instead, at Sheena Metal is where I am everywhere. And the movement is at IamRaisingTheVibration.com and RaisingTheVibration.org. Until I see you next Monday from 7 to 9 p.m., always imagine peace amongst the world, the earth, people, the creatures of the earth, the universe. I know that world peace seems like something that's so out of a scope of what could be happening right now that it's hard even to imagine, but we're never going to get to an ultimate place of peace unless we envision it, and it all starts with each and every one of us doing that. And the best way to do that is to love. Love each other, love yourself, love the universe, put more love into the world. There is no maximum for how much love should be around you, should be in you. You should be giving to people. You should be accepting from people. Love, 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 and love. And a great way to get started is with kindness. And again, what I said earlier, 5% more kind. Make that your goal. Dustin will take 3. I'd like 5. 5% kinder every day, and the tsunami of kindness that would cover the earth will blow all of our minds. And just think of random acts of kindness that you can do. And that includes kind things for yourself, because we're not good enough to ourselves. And that's something we need to work on as well. And the last cornerstone word of this movement is unity. If we don't start envisioning ourselves as one human family, my friends, the alternative is going to be ugly. Embrace positivity, renounce negativity. You don't have to like what everyone does. You don't have to believe what they believe. You don't have to be involved in with what they're involved in. But you do have to understand that we are all living on this earth together. We all have a right to be here, and we need to surround ourselves with like-minded people that understand that it's about harmony and tranquility and balance, and all of us working together as one. Peace, love, kindness, and unity. That's what IamRaisingTheVibration.com is all about. Till I see you next Monday from 7 to 9 p.m., I thank you for listening. I love you all, and I'll see you next time. Keep raising the vibration, my friends.
You're listening to Raising the Vibration with Sheena Metal, only on LA Talk Radio.
Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk.